The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The world is a complicated place. You need someone to expose the political fakers, fixers, and takers, and to cut through the mindless chatter and misdirection to help you make sense of it all. That person is Dan Proft, and this is the Dan Proft Show.
Welcome to this Wednesday edition of the Dan Proft Show, and again, follow us, danproftshow.com, podcast there, as well as Spotify and iTunes, social media at Dan Proft Show. And we begin with Tiger Woods because the news came out late last night that after that one car accident in which he was involved, which everybody's heard about by now, he was taken into surgery. There was the briefing by Los Angeles area law enforcement. But just the particulars of the injuries and the surgery, this from the chief medical officer at Harbor UCLA Medical Center. Mr. Woods suffered significant orthopedic injuries to his right lower extremity that were treated during emergency surgery by orthopedic trauma specialists. Comminuted open fractures affecting both the upper and lower portions of the tibia and fibula bones were stabilized by inserting a rod into the tibia. Additional injuries to the bones of the foot and ankle were stabilized with a combination of screws and pins. Trauma to the soft muscle and soft tissue of the leg required surgical release of the covering of the muscles to relieve pressure due to swelling. So, I mean, just in terms of translating that from doc speak to understanding, basically both of those bones pierced his skin. Let me see. These are terrible injuries. I know the reporting was, thankfully, they're serious but not life-threatening, and thankfully they weren't, and thankfully he's going to be okay and he's going to recover, but it's going to be some time, clearly. But, I mean, those are serious, serious leg injuries, and just wanted to make sure we understand just the significance of his injuries, as you know, one would anticipate with the sort of rollover crash that in which he was involved. Also, again, there was no indication of any impairment, but obviously the crash is under investigation. And it's a fair question to ask. This is not being critical of Tiger. It's just because, you know, this is a guy who's been through five back surgeries. He just actually is recovering from his fifth prior to this crash. And there was that moment a few years back in Florida where he was pulled over and arrested for driving while impaired because of the prescription drugs that he was on. And he shouldn't have been driving, admitted it. Prescription drugs that he was on, impairing his ability to drive, recovering from a previous back surgery. So anyway, and so this, of course, prompts all of the very human responses. You want the guy to get better. You're thankful that he's not more seriously injured than he is, even though he's seriously injured. And you reflect upon his career. And it's interesting because this occurred just after this weekend. He's in L.A. to play host to this PGA tournament, and he had the opportunity on Sunday to talk to Jim Nance and sort of preview whether or not he was going to be back in time recovering from back surgery. Be back in time for the Masters in April. And this is their conversation, a portion of it.
Everybody wants to know how you're feeling, what you're doing since you've come off your fifth back operation. You feeling all right?
I'm feeling fine. I'm a little bit stiff. I have one more MRI scheduled so that we'll see if the annulus is scarred over finally, and then I can start doing more activities. But still in the gym, still doing the mundane stuff that you have to do for rehab, you know, the little things, and before I can start gravitating towards something a little bit more.
So as far as golf, what have you done since the surgery? Anything?
I have lengthened my putter.
Okay, right. Starts with that.
You know, I don't have to bend over as far. No, I've gone to the same length as my sand wedge.
So,
because I do a lot of putting drills, you know, blading, hitting the equator with my sandwich, and I figured, well, if I do a lot with that, why just lengthen my putter to the same length? So I did, and it helped.
So Tiger, 7 weeks from today, final round of the Masters. You're going to be there?
Gotta hope so. I got to get there first.
Yeah, and obviously he's not going to be there this year with those injuries, and who knows? It's been interesting, some of the historical comparisons that have been made to Ben Hogan, because Hogan and Tiger are two of the greatest players that ever played the game, of course, arguably Tiger being the greatest. Because Hogan, coming into the 1949 tour season, and his wife were involved in an accident that nearly cost both of them their lives. Also, it was a question whether Ben Hogan could walk again coming out of that accident. And yet he made his return to the PGA Tour in less than a year, then went on to win the U.S. Open in 1950. Remarkable. Remarkable. Even more remarkable than Tiger coming back at the age of 43 to win the U.S. Open, to win the Masters back in 2019. And I guess my thinking on Tiger is not about golf at all, even though I'm a golf fanatic. And I couldn't help, as people are sharing their perspectives on his career and their hopes that he can come back to return to play at the level to which we've come to expect from Tiger, generally speaking. My thought wasn't about winning golf tournaments at all, or even if he comes back to the tour. My thought was two things. One is the documentary that HBO just released just a few weeks ago, the two-part documentary on Tiger Woods, and thinking about Tiger from the age, you know, being a celebrity from the age of two to the present. He was 2 years old when he appeared on the Mike Douglas Show as this, you know, infant, essentially, golf phenom. And been watched ever since. And then secondly, my thought with Tiger also going back just a few weeks was that PGA tournament, the father, son, and I think there were some LPGA players too, mother, son, or daughter, father, son, or daughter tournament, you know, the teams, where Tiger played with his son, Charlie, who I think is 11 or 12 years old. And I mean, this kid is an incredible player. Perhaps rivals Tiger at that age. So maybe Tiger's not going to catch Jack Nicklaus and his majors record. Charlie Woods may. And my thought with respect to thinking about the documentary plus that is my hope for Tiger, since the expectations of him from 2 years old on have been, number one, to be the greatest golfer in the history of the game, which I think he arguably achieved, but also, too, to be sort of this messianic figure that transcended golf. And I think he is one of those rare athletes that transcended the sport he played, like Jordan in basketball. But you watch the documentary, going back to that, and Earl Woods, his celebrated, complicated father, talks openly about not just the best in the world. That was sort of a foregone conclusion. He's going to be the best golfer the world has ever seen. He's going to be this transformational figure with respect to how nations deal with one another. I mean, he was as I said, messianic. Like, he was going to heal the world, maybe with golf, maybe beyond golf. But that was sort of the vision that Earl Woods had for Tiger. And yeah, being the best golfer in the world, Tiger embraced. Too exclusively. And that comes out a little bit in the documentary I'm referring to, if you haven't otherwise followed his life with the detail that I have. And he's a bit of a Shakespearean figure, and tragic Shakespearean figure in that way. But he never really embraced this idea that he was going to be some messianic figure for humankind. But that's a lot of weight to put on anybody, much less a kid, much less carry that weight for four decades. It's an impossible standard for anybody to live up to, and of course he failed to do so because it's impossible. So my thinking for Tiger is that he recovers at minimum enough that he can enjoy the game with his son, Charlie, and in large measure do for Charlie what Earl did for him, with maybe some lessons learned from Earl that he can pay forward to Charlie, and some lessons learned through his own life that he can pay forward to Charlie, and that he continues to serve as a global ambassador for the game. But have we learned nothing with respect to the iconization of sports figures and politicians and artists of all sorts, this idea of adulation, treating them as otherworldly. They may have an otherworldly talent, but that doesn't make them, you know, non-human, or more to the point, how they're treated, superhuman. Maybe it's time to lower our expectations for Tiger and lower the associated pressure with those expectations, tone down the adulation, celebrate his achievements, celebrate all that he has been through, celebrate him when he comes back and recovers, and you look forward to the day when he's on a golf course and returns and tips the cap to the crowd and so forth. But learn some of the lessons of, I don't know, the general population's conduct over Tiger's four decades in the spotlight, too. This is Dan Pye.
Seat and sharpen your pencils. Class is in session with Professor Dan Proft and the Dan Proft Show.